Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette for this state, Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. So let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Forfeiture Orders. Big Rig, Big Payday, $658,030. State's Attorney's Cut of Seizure, $82,254. This article is written by Mary Shank and is based out of Urbana. A police stop of a tractor-trailer truck in Champaign County about 3 months ago has resulted in a bit of a windfall for Illinois State Police and the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office. Judge Rhonda Holloman has ordered that the rig and $658,030 found in it on November 4th be forfeited to authorities after no one claimed the vehicle or the cash, both believed, tied to sinister activity. Illinois State Police and Immigration and Customs Enforcement investigators learned that the money came from Chicago and it was being driven south to Juarez, Mexico, and it was drug proceeds, State's Attorney Julia Reitz said. Reitz said an Illinois state trooper stopped a red 2009 Freightliner tractor-trailer for an alleged traffic violation as it headed south on Interstate 57 between I-72 and Curtis Road. During the course of the stop, they searched the vehicle and found a duffel bag and a suitcase filled with currency in heat-sealed bags, she said, adding there were no drugs found. Reitz said federal authorities took the driver. She was unaware what happened to him. The truck and the cash, however, were seized by Illinois State Police, and because the stop happened in Champaign County, her office took steps the next day to seek forfeiture of both, alleging that the truck was used in the commission of a crime. Notice of the intent to seek forfeiture was sent to two men, one living in El Paso, Texas, and the other in Chihuahua, Mexico. No one came to claim the truck or the money, Reitz said. $82,254 for Reitz's office. The law concerning forfeitures spells out that the state's attorney's office in the county where the seizure happened gets 12.5% of the proceeds. The Illinois office of the state's attorney appellate prosecutor gets 12.5%. The seizing agency gets 65%. And the Illinois State Police gets 10% for administrative fees. In this case, that means State Police will net $493,522, and the Champaign County State's Attorney and the State's Appellate Prosecutor Offices will receive $82,254 each. Still to come will be the proceeds from the sale of the truck trailer rig. The law governing forfeitures specifies how those agencies may spend the money. We generally use it for training and for equipment we use in the prosecution of cases, Reitz said. It cannot be used for salaries. Assistant State's Attorney Christopher McCollum, who handled the forfeiture proceeding, explained that there has to be a connection between the items the authorities are seeking to take and criminal activity. In drug cases, for example, if large amounts of cash are found near drugs, authorities will ask that the money be forfeited. There has to be some sort of showing of how is this tied to an illegal thing, McCollum said, adding that it's not the office's intent to take someone's vehicle for a single driving under the influence. But if the vehicle is used over and over in the commission of crimes, it is something authorities want to deprive the bad guy of, he said. Truck, Mercedes, forfeited. In other forfeiture orders entered Friday by Holloman, a 2004 Dodge Ram pickup truck belonging to Tyson Biggers was ordered forfeited. Biggers was sentenced January 28th to 25 and a half years in prison for armed robbery for holding up a Champaign convenience store on October 19th. He used the truck to get away from the store. Although he pleaded to only one armed robbery, he was accused of robbing the same store at gunpoint 5 days later and using the same truck to get away. That charge was dismissed in return for his plea. The truck's value won't be known until after it's auctioned, Reitz said. Also, a 2003 Mercedes-Benz belonging to Hamza al-Ghadi, 35, of Crete, who used the car to allegedly flee from Champaign County Sheriff's deputies about 4 a.m. on November 3rd. He was pulled over by deputies who smelled the odor of alcohol, then took off, doing 90 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone. They eventually pulled the car over. He got out and ran into a cornfield. He came out and surrendered to police, McCollum said. While Al-Ghadi's criminal case for the alleged fleeing has not been resolved, McCollum said Al-Ghadi did not challenge the order seeking forfeiture of his car or show up for the forfeiture hearing. Court records show Al-Ghadi has other Champaign County criminal convictions for criminal trespass to residents, communicating with a witness, and a narcotics violation. McCollum said the estimated value of Al-Ghadi's car is between $30,000 and $40,000. The next headline reads, One Winter Night, Organizers Hope, More the Merrier. This article is written by Anthony Zillis and is based out of Champaign. The box dwellers lining the streets of downtown will be noticeable at Friday's One Winter Night, CU at Home director Rob Dalhouse III realizes. But he also wants the general public to know that when they see people setting up their makeshift homes, the event isn't exclusively for the volunteers sleeping outdoors. All are welcome to drop by the event's home base at the Orpheum for an event that will raise money for CU at Home, which Dalhouse hopes becomes Champaign-Urbana's homeless service hub this year. We'd really like to encourage folks, just because you're not box dwelling or volunteering, come down, enjoy the experience, hang out at headquarters, visit with speakers, visit with the musical performers, Dalhouse said. This isn't just an event for the box dwellers, and I think that could be a misconception for folks, but this is a community education event. The event has secured 285 box dwellers thus far, and $218,713 in donations, close to two-thirds of its goal of $350,000. That goal is larger and especially important with the integration of Austin's Place, Champaign's women's shelter, into the CU at Home building, which is located at 70 East Washington Street, just north of downtown. The organization will make a push for donations on Friday, and fundraising will continue for the following 2 weeks. Having 70 East Washington be that homeless service hub will be, I think, a good thing for the community, Dalhouse said. That's D-A-L-H-A-U-S. It helps keep information clear. When people see somebody in need and they're like, where do I send him? What do I do? They'll be like, oh yeah, 70 East Washington. That, I think, will help with some of the confusion. Four musical acts will play this year, including one guitar player who utilizes the organization's services and a local Congolese gospel choir. Talks and discussions will be interspersed, and CU at Home's documentary will be played multiple times on a projector on one side of the stage. If you're just down eating at Hamilton Walker's, you can come into the Orpheum and say, hey, they're talking about law enforcement and homelessness, or there's a pastor talking about bringing spirituality to the streets. And that sounds interesting. You can sit in and hear that, Dalhouse said. I know there's going to be a home Illinois basketball game, so if people come downtown for a meal, for a drink, whatever they're doing, maybe they'll come check us out and ask some of the box dwellers, where are you doing? What are you doing out here? It gives us an opportunity to spread the reach and the mission. The next headline reads, Kids Doing Good Things. It's in the bags. Innovative Eagle Scout Project delivers the goods. This article is also written by Anthony Zillis and is based out of Champaign. The idea for Nicholas Pianfetti's Eagle Scout Project was sparked by his uncle's preparedness. Before visiting Pianfetti's grandfather in the ICU in Champaign, the Chicago-based uncle, Harry Sakaris, learned to make sure to pack a small bag of essentials that would be hard to find. From there, we thought, what if we did this for people in our community, Pianfetti said. So Pianfetti formed the idea to put together bags of toiletries and other things people needed in the ICU and pitched the thought to Carle Hospital. They really wanted to start something like this, Pianfetti said. They said the nurses had asked a lot for it because they often had to search through the hospital to find some of these personal hygiene products, which takes them away from their primary task, which is to help the patient. They've been trying for the past few years to get something like this started, so they were happy to have me there to get things going. Pianfetti set a conservative goal of putting together around 300 bags. He went to Walmart, which allowed him to solicit donations for a few days, and he contacted various businesses to ask for donations. His mother, City Council Member Vanna Pianfetti, helped him orchestrate a social media blitz through her accounts, where they posted videos he made asking for donations. Carle received donations through a link on its mobile fundraising app, or page, excuse me. In all, he raised $40,000, enough for 1,000 bags. He also organized the installation of phone charging stations in rooms. Pianfetti brought tubs and tubs of supplies to the Carle guest house, where he, along with members of Troops 101 in 2019, put together the bags. Scouts are very efficient, his mother said. It was a manual assembly line that they would go through. Originally, she pushed her son toward another Eagle Scout project, but Nicholas clearly saw the importance of this one and latched on. I'm glad he went with his own idea, Vanna said, because you have to be passionate about an idea in order to lead it. I think he really saw that this was something that meant a lot firsthand and might make a difference. The Eagle Scout badge wasn't Pianfetti's only reward for his efforts. He also earned the Outstanding Youth in Philanthropy for his Eagle Project from the East Central Illinois Association of Fundraising Professionals. He also found out that the bags served their intended purpose when he talked to a nurse at the reception for the award. He said that these care bags were really helpful with him, Pianfetti said. It was really able to help the families and be able to not worry about some of these things and to be able to focus on them. He said it really just made it easier and it made the families more comfortable and put them at ease as they're dealing with their family member. And now let's take a look at our forecast for this upcoming week. This is provided to us by Greg Solier and his column on the weather front. In advance of a slow-moving system, record-setting warmth will prevail during the next few days across the south, east, and lower Midwest. Warmth will linger in the east through Thursday, but markedly cooler air will trail the storm into the western and central U.S. Freezes may occur starting this morning in California's San Joaquin Valley and parts of the desert southwest. In addition, heavy snow will develop across southern sections of the Rockies and High Plains and develop across parts of the Midwest. After midweek, snow should develop in parts of the Northeast. Farther south, a heavy rain event will unfold across the southeast, where five-day totals could reach 2 to 5 inches or more. Today, 40 degrees, much cooler, cloudy, light rain at times, slowly falling temperatures, north wind 10 to 20 miles per hour, chance of rain will be at 50%. Overnight, breezy and colder, occasional rain mixes with and turns to snow. Wednesday, the high will be 32, the low is 27, windy and colder, some lingering light snow for noon, perhaps mixing with rain, snow again at night, potential accumulation of 5 to 7 inches, so that's Wednesday night. Thursday, the high will be 30, the low is 25, some snow lingers for noon. Cloudy, breezy, north wind 12 to 24 miles per hour, chance of snow is at 40%. Friday, the high will be 31, the low will be 20, it will be mostly cloudy. And Saturday, the high is 35, the low is 23, and it will be partly sunny. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. For his performance of One Week by Bare Naked Ladies, Colin Ramage, R-A-M-A-G-E, won CU's Got Talent on Saturday night at the Virginia Theater. He would have voted for his better half. It's a song with a ton of words, sung very quickly, so I spent a lot of time just repeating them all over and over, Ramage said. My wife is a saint for not kicking me out of the house for the number of times I went through that. We'll spotlight Ramage, and this weekend's Getting Personal, and run pictures from Champaign West Rotary's major fundraiser in On the Town, on February 16th. Ramage celebrated with family and friends at Hamilton Walker's. "This is probably the biggest win I've had since last summer," he said. "I married the woman of my dreams, had an awesome honeymoon, got a promotion at Busey, and was asked to serve on the board of Habitat for Humanity within 6 weeks." And there's a nice picture in the paper taken by Daryl Homan for the News Gazette. Susan Jepson, president of Champaign West Rotary, presents the first place award to Colin Ramage at the Virginia Theater on Saturday. So they're on stage. There's a big kind of green screen in the background. And a woman is handing, looks like a small trophy, an award to a man on the right. And he is dressed in like a flannel shirt. History. Area history. In 1920, Herbert Boggs of Gifford, under indictment for taking indecent liberties with a 7-year-old girl, jumped his bail and left his sureties, his father and his attorney, holding the sack. Today, a forfeit of the $1,000 bond was entered against Nathan Boggs and attorney Harry Kirker. In 1970, Champaign and Urbana officials have fewer than 2 weeks to prepare their case for why a privately run bus company should not be allowed to discontinue service to the community. Westover Transit Management Corp., the owner of CU City Lines, said that it is losing money and that since World War II, there has been a continual reduction in bus passengers. In 1957, for example, the bus company carried 1.4 million passengers. Last year, that number dropped to 480,000. In 2005, Susie Waxham's job is moving to the other side of Rantoul next year, but she doesn't mind. Waxham is one of 135 employees at the Rantoul Walmart who will be moving to a new Walmart Supercenter near Interstate 57 when it opens in the late summer of 2006. International history. Today's highlight. On February 4th, 2004, the social networking website Facebook had its beginnings at Harvard student Mark Zuckerberg launched the Facebook. On this date, in 1789, electors chose George Washington to be the first president of the United States. In 1861, delegates from 6 southern states that had recently seceded from the Union met in Montgomery, Alabama, to form the Confederate States of America. In 1938, the Thornton Wilder play Our Town opened on Broadway. In 1974, newspaper heiress Patricia Hearst, 19, was kidnapped in Berkeley, California by the radical Symbionese Liberation Army. In 1997, a civil jury in Santa Monica, California, found O.J. Simpson liable for the deaths of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Goldman. In 2004, the Massachusetts High Court declared that gay couples were entitled to nothing less than marriage and that Vermont-style civil unions would not suffice. The next headline reads, State of Illinois. State mistakenly cancels voter registrations of 774 ex-inmates. This is written by the Associated Press and is an article that's based out of Chicago. The voter registrations of nearly 800 former Illinois inmates may have been mistakenly canceled because of a data matching error between state agencies, the State Board of Elections disclosed on Monday. In Illinois, the voting rights of inmates convicted of crimes are suspended during incarceration, but restored upon release, though they have to register again. The error involves people who had completed their sentences, were discharged, and had re-registered. The error with the 774 inmates happened when election officials wrongly categorized a data set from the Corrections Department as people currently incarcerated. Election officials first discovered the error in November, but officials said they didn't know the extent of the problem until recently. The Board of Elections and Department of Corrections are committed to ensuring this does not happen again, said a statement Monday. The IDOC said in a statement that it supports the civic engagement of returning citizens and provides all individuals released from custody with a voter registration application. The inmates' records were included in roughly 126,000 shared between 2014 and 2019, election officials said. Local election authorities were reviewing the information for potential reinstatement by Thursday when early voting starts for Illinois' March 17th primary. Election officials said it was possible that some of the cancellations might have been for reasons unrelated to the data error. Election officials believe that those who were eligible would have been able to vote even with the canceled registrations because of changes in the law. Same-day voter registration began in Illinois in 2014. And there's a quick chart breakdown in the center of this article. It's called Breakdown, a look at the number of former inmates who had their voter registrations canceled in notable counties. County, Cook, cancellations, 245. In Champaign, there were 28 cancellations. Macon, also 28. Peoria, 13. Coles, 7. McLean, 4. Sangamon, 3. Effingham, 1. The next headline reads, Two Tribune Execs Stepping Down. This is an article also written by the Associated Press and based out of Chicago. Two top executives at newspaper publisher Tribune are stepping down as the company deals with its largest shareholder, a hedge fund known for cutting newsroom jobs, and grapples with a decline in revenue as the print ad business shrinks. The Chicago-based company, which owns the Chicago Tribune, New York Daily News, Baltimore Sun, and other major daily papers, said in a Monday statement that CEO Timothy Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, and non-executive chairman David Dreyer are both leaving their positions. The company is promoting Chief Financial Officer Terry Jimenez to the new CEO, effective January 31st. In a statement, Knight, who became CEO last January, said that the past year was focused on stabilizing Tribune financially so that the company can invest in quality local journalism, and that the company was in a solid position to continue its transformation, quote unquote. In a memo to staff, he said the company will need to continue adjusting its costs to the current revenue reality. The next headline reads, Go Figure, editor Jeff D'Alessio's numerical look at local headlines. And here are the numbers. 1.9 inches of snow that dusted Champaign-Urbana last month, 4.9 fewer than in the typical January. But if meteorologists are to be believed, Mother Nature is going to make up for it this week. After an unseasonably balmy Sunday and Monday, the local forecast calls for rain turning into snow tonight and late Wednesday, with as much as 5 to 7 inches covering CU by the time you wake up on Thursday. In an average February, CU gets 5.8 inches. The next number, 95, going on 50. Age of local sports media legend Fowler Connell, named Monday the third recipient of CRIS, C-R-I-S, Healthy Aging Center's Senior Citizen of the Year. The one-time News Gazette sports staffer joins All-Star Company. The Danville-based agency's first two honorees were Julius Helgeler II and Lou Henson. Connell, who can still be heard on Danville's WDAN radio, is on an awards roll. Last month, he was presented with the IHSA's Distinguished Media Service Award, the same honor bestowed upon News Gazette alum Fred Kroner in 2015. The next number, 28.2, percentage of land of Lincoln cannabis sales made to out-of-staters during the first 31 days of Illinois' legal pot program. All told, according to figures released by the state on Monday, dispensaries sold 972,045 items for a combined, 39,247,840.83. Illinois residents bought 30,611,632.22 worth of joints, gummies, pot-laced granola bars, and other tasty adult treats, while out-of-staters ponied up a collective $8,636,208.61 at Illinois dispensaries. A portion of every sale will be reinvested in communities harmed most by the failed war on drugs, the Office of Governor J.B. Pritzker noted in Monday's announcement, said Toy, T-O-I, Hutchinson, Pritzker's senior advisor for cannabis control. The administration is dedicated to providing multiple points of entry into this new industry, from dispensary owners to transporters, to ensure legalization is equitable and accessible for all Illinoisans. The next number, 3. Big award set to be handed out at today's 96th annual meeting of the United Way of Champaign County, a sold-out affair at the iHotel and Conference Center. Take a bow, Steve Tock, T-O-C-K, Champaign Jewelers, and Caterpillar. This year's individual and business winners of the agency's highest honor, the Spirit of Caring Award. Also, Ameren Illinois, which beat out fellow finalists Carl Health Alliance and the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District for Outstanding Workplace Giving Campaign Honors. And 4 difference makers who use their circles of influence, always ask how they can help, and roll up their sleeves to get things done for our community. Those people are Tracy Parsons of Subaru of Champaign County, Joe O'Neill of Unity Boys Youth Basketball, and Julie Pryde, P-R-Y-D-E. And the last number, -1. Round 2 of Champaign County Democratic primary forums, set for a week from today at the Champaign City Building, will feature candidates in 3 races, not the 4 originally planned. Scratched from the lineup, the forum featuring candidates for the County Board District 9 seat, Cynthia Fears and Jennifer Straub. Cynthia Fears has decided not to attend. According to LWV rules, 2 or more candidates must agree to attend. This means that Fears Straub is canceled, the League of Women Voters, Jonah Von Behrens, said on Monday. The rest of next Tuesday night's schedule remains unchanged, Von Behrens said. From 7 to 7:45, Betsy Dirksen Londrigan and Stephanie Smith for the U.S. House 13th District. From 7:50 to 8:20, Deshaun Williams and Charles Young, County Board District 6. From 8:25 to 8:55, Mary King and Connie Dillard Myers, County Board District 10. The forums are co-sponsored by the LWV of Champaign County, the NAACP of Champaign County, and the News Gazette. The next headline reads, early morning incident. Shooting claims life of Champaign man. This article is written by Ben Zichterman and is based out of Champaign. A Champaign man shot in the abdomen early Monday morning while sitting in his car later died at the hospital, police said. Galen R. Davis Allen, age 33, of Champaign, was found unresponsive in his car just before 3 a.m. in the 1300 block of Mariner Way, Champaign, after police responded to a report of a shooting. Davis Allen was taken to Carl Foundation Hospital and rushed into surgery, but succumbed to his injuries a short time later, police spokesman Tom Yellick said. He was pronounced dead at 5:20 a.m., Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup said. The preliminary investigation indicates Davis Allen was seated inside a parked vehicle when the suspect approached, fired into the vehicle, and then drove away from the scene, Yellick said. He said evidence and information from the initial investigation led police to suspect Dondre Miller allegedly shot Davis Allen, and an arrest warrant has been issued for Miller, 33, of Champaign. Yellick declined to offer more specifics about what led police to suspect Miller, as it remains an active ongoing investigation. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, February 4th, 2019. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back shortly with Part 2. Stay with us.